All right, welcome back. Last year, while the Indianapolis Board of School Commissioners was looking for a new superintendent, they reached out to the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce, the Indy Chamber, and said, can y'all pull some people together to kind of look at IPS and how IPS can do its job better, reduce spending, utilize facilities, all kind of good stuff. So they put together a big committee. They have presented the report the first part of this week in the House. Is the president of the Indy Chamber, Mike Huber. Joe Slash was on the committee because, you know, Joe's an ex-accountant, so he knows how to look at money. And then the superintendent of IPS, Dr. Louis Farabee, is in the house. Guys, welcome.
Thank you.
So in this report, Mike Huber, you guys were asked to look at what?
Mainly four areas of the business operation of IPS. Operations, which included facilities, finance, human resources, and information technology. The idea being that those are four areas that for any type of organization, be they, you know, public sector, private sector, educational, are can be sources of hidden cost and hidden spend. We formed four teams with folks from the business community who have some level of expertise in those areas.
One of the things in the executive report, you talk about the IT, the finance. We'll get to transportation and buildings in a minute because that's what everybody focuses on. But one of the things I was kind of surprised at was the area dealing with human resources, dealing with morale and the people of IPS. Why look at that?
More and more, the culture of an organization, and this is something that's true in private sector, public sector, anywhere, the culture within an organization and an organization's ability to recruit high performers and retain and develop high performers is everything. It impacts the product that you produce, whether it's educated students or whether you're, you know, making a product for consumers. And so that was an area that early on our leaders from the business community really focused on.
Amos, also, if I could add, understanding the human resource side of this thing, particularly when we're looking at change and transition, understanding the human resource side of how to communicate, understand, and manage through change and transition is very important and oftentimes gets overlooked.
And Superintendent, you're coming in when this process had had been started. What kind of input did you have, or is this something where you hung back waiting to see this report and your reaction to the report?
Fortunately, I came in a point where I could still be heavily involved and have my footprint on the report. Mm-hmm. So I had an opportunity to have several meetings with these gentlemen and other volunteers from the business community. And we actually talked through a lot of what's been documented here. And fortunately, many of their recommendations do align with some of the work that I've already initiated during my short tenure in the district over the last 5 months. Again, I had an opportunity to be very engaged with the development process and also how we communicate with the community.
In this report, it details and really gives the community for a first time really a look at how fully utilized or underutilized IPS buildings are. And that's going to start the discussion. And, you know, Joe Slash remembers this. Folks get real sensitive when you start talking about school building. I don't know whether was that the thing in Durham?
I think the for many communities, the schools represent rich history, the heartbeat of the neighborhood, and individuals should be sensitive, you know, and so you got graduates out who have schools that they attended that are near and dear to their hearts. There's some neighborhoods and community schools that mean a lot to the community. And so when questions are being raised and the potential of closures are being proposed, obviously that raises eyebrows.
Is this something, one of the things as I looked through the report that kind of surprised me, and I didn't, Mike Huber may not have realized it going in, I didn't realize that a lot of IPS's school buildings are the collateral for the bond issue that was done now more than 10, 15 years ago, that upgraded facilities to put air conditioning in all the schools. I didn't know the schools had, there was a more, well, not a mortgage, well, Joe, but this is like, Hey, in case y'all never paid a bill,
you don't pay the bill. The bondholders own the asset.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, some of these, they were staggered. If you recall, there were a three-part capital improvement plan. So there's various staging of the aging out of the liabilities and paying off those bonds. So we got to figure out how to best utilize these assets that the district has, unless we can find a way to dispose of the asset and the debt with it.
In the recommendations, obviously, I think that the average person would have said, wait a minute, if they're $30 million in the hole, sell the Ed Center, sell where the bus barn, sell the Coke thing. But then there's also money they'd have to spend. If you sell the bus barn, the bus has got to go somewhere. If you sell the Ed Center, superintendent's not going to run the school system out of a trailer in a parking lot somewhere. Does the report deal with how the extra money you'd have to spend to replace those facilities versus how much you could get for?
Unfortunately, the report only goes so deep in terms of how you could manage those individual real estate opportunities. Now, I, you know, selfishly, it is my hope that that is an, and we've let Dr. Farabee know, if Dr. Farabee and the board want to go deeper into some of those opportunities and need various forms of business assistance, we're definitely ready to help. One of the complicating factors that I didn't appreciate early on until we got into the report was, you know, selling or leasing the building, there might be instances in which that's the right thing to do for IPS, but maybe not for the community at large. For instance, many of these school buildings, even those that are over 100 years old, are really like gold. They're meaningful to the neighborhood, but they're also built to last. Mm. And so, you know, a commercial use and a business use for a building that IPS would decide that it wouldn't need anymore might not be the best thing for the community. You know, there may be some other kind of reuse or shared use that that the district could pursue in one of these buildings, particularly those that are built to last.
One of the things the report does in the appendix, and normally people don't read the appendix, I love to read the appendix, is it, you guys analyzed every school building, not just where it stands on that grading thing, but what relationship it has with the neighborhood. Superintendent, with that kind of analysis, how does that influence as you're trying to get your D and F schools up to D, C, and B?
It's very helpful. You know, I'm very pleased with this report in that it provides a very comprehensive view of our facilities and how our facilities are related to teaching and learning in our communities. And so this is very helpful as we think about, you know, some of the tough decisions ahead as we think about being more efficient and also protecting our resources to ensure that our classrooms have what they need. And so we'll use this information along with the short and long-term recommendations to begin our planning process, and we'll explore the feasibility of the recommendations provided.
Should we be concerned that one of the things in the report said, if IPS was at full capacity, all buildings, it's built for about, I thought I saw like 50 to 60,000 students. You're at 30 now. Mm-hmm. And cross your fingers, you might get to 31, 32, 33. With that, we ought to have parade. You get to that level. But that means the chances of getting to the 60,000 is slim to none. At some point, would there be this IPS going back to the chamber to say, you know, what should be the framework if the board and the superintendent decides, yeah, we need to close a building? Because that's when stuff really gets emotional, both at the neighborhood level, the school level, and the community level.
So before we start the conversation around closures, I think we need to first go down the street of how we can better utilize our facilities. And mm-hmm. So, you know, there are a lot of thoughts that I have around that. For example, I'm aware of school corporations that have health clinics for staff or students within our, you know, within school facilities. So if a teacher's not feeling well, they can get a wellness visit, or we can do our regular screening and immunizations for students within our school. So that's one option. There's definitely a need for wraparound services for students and families in many of our other neighborhoods. And so, you know, how do we offer services within our facilities as well to help families and students, you know, outside of just teaching and learning, provides many opportunities for us to think differently about how we utilize our buildings. And so I would first want to make sure that we've maximized the opportunities to use them in every meaningful way possible before we go down the street of talking about closures. And so, you know, while we have space and we may have a surplus of space for teaching and learning, we may have space that we can use in a different way. Pre-K and early education is a hot topic in our community. I believe everyone understands that we need to do a better job with educating our four-year-olds and even our birth to K population. And so, again, how do we help families in that regard could be related to how we use our space. So tremendous opportunities there, and I want to make sure that we capitalize on all those opportunities before we go down the avenue of closures.
One of the areas that you talked about was GPS. One was the most basic thing, put a GPS thingamajig in every IPS bus, or just give the bus driver a GPS phone, and it's almost the same thing. But then also a greater utilization of Indigo. How do you do that and circumvent the federal law that prohibits transit agencies that accept federal money from doing any kind of charter?
It is complex. But once our team that looked at transportation got into the report and working with Dr. Farabee's staff, we saw a lot. There are other cities that do a much better job of more fully utilizing their public transportation to get kids to and from school. And they are able to do it in a way that doesn't run afoul of federal guidelines. So I don't know what the master plan is, but I know there are a lot of ideas here and there that we can pick up from other cities that do a more effective job of this.
How do we do that, though, because there is this concern of not recent incidents, over the last 2 or 3 or 4 years of misbehavior at the bus stops downtown, particularly the one outside the federal building that allegedly involves school-age kids, some perhaps from the Met School, some perhaps from the alternative school up on Meridian Street. And so there might be community fears of, oh my God, yeah, we don't want them kids back on the bus. We didn't want them on the bus back in the 80s. And Joe Slash remembers in his days working for Mayor Bill Hudnut when the decision was made to move the buses out in front of where LS Ayers was on Washington Street because they got tired of the kids being out front.
Amos, this thing has been a historical thing that you and I have looked at for years. And I think at some point in time, the community's got to take up the responsibility for the behavior of our young people in public transportation or in public places. We can't put all of this on the school systems. I think some of the community leaders have continued conversation about how to more manage and provide programming for the young people in our community and reduce the violence. We've got to take on some responsibility in the community for letting young people know that certain of their behaviors are unacceptable. And we've got to help Dr. Farabee and the other superintendents in our community with this issue. But we need to also understand and better utilize all of the public assets, including Indigo, because of the overlapping provision of bus services for schools and public. There's got to be some efficiencies, opportunities gained here, Amos.
Is there also, Superintendent, concern that we've got other school districts in the county? I know Beech Grove has had it. Decatur is concerned about the cost of busing. Franklin Township and some others. At some point, that's going to hit you. Are you all looking at that financial train wreck of the tax caps and how it relates to the transportation funding?
Right. So the good news is, you know, you talk about the GPS tracking is we've already started that. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I want to continue to emphasize that a lot of the recommendations, you know, I've already started that path in my tenure.
Okay.
And ultimately, the GPS tracking will help us be more efficient, but also track the drivers for safety reasons as well. And we always have an opportunity to know where our students are. As it relates to Indigo, you know, I just believe that we can learn from other urban areas that have taken advantage of public transit and used it a way to help transport students. I mean, I know places where students have an ID that has a barcode, and they use that ID to ride public transit. And if there's a behavior issue, the student is tracked by that ID card. And if there needs to be consequences, that's a way of keeping track of who's who. And so if a student were to give away his or her card, then they give away that that opportunity to ride public transportation. I think that's just one example of many. But you're right about, you know, the funding and ability to provide transportation long term. We will have challenges. You know, you have to give the Department of Ed a 3-year notice if you want to do away with providing transportation, and many school corporations already started that.
239-1310. 239-1310 is after his name. We'll take a break, come back. Joe Slash is here, the head of the chamber. He's here. Mike Huber, superintendent, is here. And you're here. 239-1310. A couple of things in the report, including one thing I saw that I think they really didn't want to put in the report. I think they put it in there by accident. And I found it by accident. We'll talk to them about the break, because if I actually read this on air, somebody could get in trouble, and it ain't going to be me. 239-1310. Oh, and let me ask the chamber a question about what the mayor is expected to say tomorrow about trying to attract the 50,000 additional people to come to town. And then there's some stuff that's breaking this afternoon as it relates good things about IPS. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Let me go to the phones. And Andre, hi there.
How are you doing today, sir?
We're fine.
I had two concerns.
Okay.
The first concern is when it relates to moving the transportation for the students because of community concerns. Could we work with the police department to develop a reserve unit that can be there in the morning times and after school to make sure that the students are safe and not causing any problems?
See, that's why I like this show, because there's some smart people on this show. Yeah. I know they're IMPD reserves, they're sheriff reserves. That is a great idea. In terms of utilizing, Indigo and having students on there wherever the transfer points are, that's a great idea.
I can't speak for the city, but I know for a fact that that if something like this were to be considered, so using Indigo to transport more students, the number one priority, and I'm looking at Dr. Farabee, the number one priority would have to be safety. So if the enhanced safety couldn't be addressed, we wouldn't be in a position to do it as a community, right?
I mean, I completely agree. Safety is paramount. And so whatever solutions that we arrive at, we need to make sure that our students can be transported to and from school safely.
All right, let me go to Al. Thank you, Andre. Let me go to Al at 239-1310. Hi there.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
It was obvious to me because you have such clear reception. It just all sounds really good. I wanted to make two comments to the superintendent because he has two programs that I really like. One is the moot court program at Shortridge High School, which currently, I believe, tries a lot of the truancy cases, if not all of the truancy cases, but a number of other kinds of cases for all of the IPS schools around the district, and gives the students who are law and public policy students at that school an opportunity to learn a part of where they're headed going to law school as a defense attorney or a prosecuting attorney, and to have a student come who's been basically given a summons by a teacher. Rather than sending them to a principal's office, they're now sending them to this moot court, and I just think it's a fabulous program. The students learn from the process. When they have to bring their parents, the parents see that the students are actively involved in working to try and correct student behavior in the schools, and I think the adjudicator who runs the program does a terrific job because she asks a lot of the students at the end of the court session for their testimonies, and there are kids who stand up and say, I was where you were a couple of years ago, and if you get your act together, you can be on your way to college like I am, and I'm headed to, Cornell. And I just thought it was a wonderful program. A couple of days that I participated in it and watched it and thought it was very well done. And there's another program that is really low on the radar at IPS, but I think it's a pilot program for some phenomenal stuff, and that's what IPS is doing in special education in collaboration with the IU CUI, Christian Sartine Center, and Autism. And I don't know what it's called or where it is. I know it exists in two or three of the elementary and at least one middle school. I don't know how pervasive it is at high school, but when I looked at it two or three years ago, it was a wonderful program. It was making tremendous results. And I'd like to see that expanded wherever possible because they're doing a terrific job with what I would consider a pilot program in an area that is just blossoming in this country.
Superintendent?
Thank you, sir, for the feedback. You know, it's great to hear, you know, the positive things are going well in our district. I concur, you know, what you describe, what we're doing with our special education students in partnership with IUPUI is very promising. And I am very pleased as well with the law and public policy program at Shortridge Magnet High School and how we are engaging students in, you know, the field of law and making it very practical and giving students real world learning experiences. And so, you know, you've highlighted, I think, two of our more successful programs of many. But again, it's great to hear that you share the same perspective and we'll continue to expand those programs as much as possible.
23. All right, appreciate it. Let me go to Larry at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
Fine.
You know, it's so sad to see the same actors come out of the from under their rocks to destroy IPS and to destroy our kids' future. And it's just sad because I've been noticing over the last 30 years, the same names come up every time there's some move to run a sham. And I think they know who they are. But I just asked Dr. Therapy, have you started paying teachers? I mean, you know what they're doing, Amos? They're not paying their teachers. They're expecting them to work for nothing. And that's what they have in common with the charter schools in this district. Because the other white districts are paying their teachers fully when they do their work. But what Therapy have started when his first came here, to not pay teachers for the work that they're doing and to threaten them if they say anything about it. So he's got 100 or so teachers that I've contacted that he has threatened that if they ask anything else about their salary, their work is going to be terminated. So I'd just like him to come across with that. And as far as having the adjudication school at Shortridge, that is training people how to go to court and how to go to jail. And I think that's what he's up to because he doesn't know nothing about IPS. He's just another hatchet man come on the scene to operate with the other clowns that come from under their rocks whenever our kids are in jeopardy. So they need to be ashamed of themselves. And you need to pay up a therapy, you're a bum.
All right, and he likes you too. 239-1310, 239-1310. And the adjudicator school was long before the superintendent, the adjudicator system at Shortridge was long before that. But let me raise a question. Sitting in the chair, Superintendent.
But can I please respond?
You most certainly can.
So, you know, I want to be clear about the salary. Like many school corporations in this area, we have not been able to raise teacher salaries, but we have not decreased teacher salaries. Our actual teacher salaries are higher than those if you would compare with like a Carmel Clay school system. And so, you know, we're very competitive. We're in the middle of the road among other townships here in Indianapolis as you think about teacher salary. The other thing that I would say is this administration nor I have threatened any teachers about, you know, their salary or speaking up and they'll be terminated. That's just not how I do business. And so I just want that to be communicated very clearly.
Amos, if I could add on the response to Larry, and this operation was initiated before Dr. Therapy was brought on as superintendent. Indianapolis Public Schools is facing a deficit the next fiscal year that begins next July, this coming July. And there had to be a reduction in spending levels or an addition of revenues in order to help the system not crash and burn and have to have more draconian cuts and reductions in services and staff than what we are going to see. But the actual reality is that with the changing revenue distribution, with the shifting population, and particularly the shifting school population of students moving between districts and charter schools, IPS had to face a reality of how do we reduce our expenditures or bring in new revenues, and that's essentially why this task force was in existence by the Chamber of Commerce.
Let me go quickly to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, how are you all doing?
We're fine.
Okay, good. I have a comment as well about the cost for the teachers. But Farabee did bring in a new principal, and that principal is getting paid more money than she got paid when she was down south. And that money that he had to give her to come here, that money could have gone to the teachers or even the substitute teachers. You have substitute teachers that take on long-term positions. Yes, they get paid a little bit more, but they're expected to do even more than what she's doing as a long-term sub. As a long-term sub, they look forward to doing everything a teacher does, lesson plans, grading papers, putting in grades and everything for still the same rate as a substitute teacher. So something needs to be done about that as well. And as far as our kids are concerned, if you really take a deep look into IPS system, our children are set up to fail. The system have set our children up to fail. We're going to get a few that's going to make it, but the majority of them are going to fail. They're building jail for our kids. They already know how many black kids are going to be by the wayside. And they're already preparing for that. Their system is not really set up because, you know, it's not a hard thing to figure out what they need to do to make the school system better that would actually benefit the children. But they're not interested in that. They really aren't. But if you take a deep look at it, you'll see it for yourself. Thank you.
Superintendent, as you've gone around the district, you've heard some of those same comments. Your reaction?
In regards to we have a system.
What the caller just said. Yeah. That perception as a system to fail, you're going to fail everybody.
We have had a system where we've had chronically low-performing schools where we have not served students well. And I don't think that's a secret. And so I am working diligently and aggressively to ensure that we have stronger leadership for those schools and that we create a sense of urgency around producing stronger student outcomes. We can't continue to fail our students in some of the schools that have been persistently low performing and underachieving. But I would say that we have a number of schools that are performing really well, and students have an opportunity to have access to a quality education. And so I would not want to paint that as the entire picture for the district. But again, I don't want to paint a picture that's too rosy as well, because we have a lot of work to do in terms of ensuring that our students have a quality education. And we understand if we're able to do that well, we're setting them up for success.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments. Superintendent is here. The head of the chamber is here. Joe Slash, head of the Urban League, is here. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. A couple things quick for the superintendent. You made a recommendation. The board approved 23 administrators whose administrative contracts will not be renewed. They could reapply for other jobs within the system. There is a concern that I think the majority of the people on that list are African-American. There's already a limited number of African-American administrators. Anyway, should the community be concerned that the number of African-American administrators in IPS is going down?
I would say that if you look at the list of 23 administrative contract non-renewals, I would say it's pretty balanced. Of that, about half are minority, the other half not minority. And so we've been very fair with, you know, our criteria that we use in terms of determining who would be renewed and who would not. And so in regard of being, you know, equitable in terms of race, I wouldn't say that there were any concerns there. What I would say, my greater concern is that, if I look at our student population, it does not mirror our teaching force.
Mm-hmm.
So 80% of our teachers are non-minority, but almost 80% of our students are minority. And so where I think we've got to do a better job is ensure that we have greater diversity in our classrooms among our teachers.
There was an alleged incident on a school bus you're investigating?
Yes, sir. There was an incident with the contract service provider we have for transportation. One of their drivers and one of her student got into an altercation. What I've said is we will not have anyone transport our students that are going to be a threat to our students. And so that driver or any other driver who attempts to hurt or harm any of our students will not be allowed to drive a bus for IPS or Durham. And we're working with Durham to ensure that incidents like this do not occur in the future.
And there will be something people will read in the paper tomorrow or see online or see tonight on television, and that is something that occurred before you became superintendent, a concern by the Department of Justice that young ladies in IPS schools were not having the same opportunities for athletics as the guys.
Yes, and so I'm glad that that door was open, because we need to make sure that we have equity and access in all of our extracurriculars for males and females. So we've done some work and taken some corrective actions, but the Office of Civil Rights has asked us to do more. And so we're willing to do that. And so we've agreed on corrective actions, and we want to make sure that, again, we're being fair to our young ladies.
And quickly, for Mike Huber of the Chamber and Joe Slash from the Urban League, the mayor is expected to issue a call to try to attract as many as 50,000 more, you know, young, you know, people 25 to 44 to move to Indianapolis. How do we make sure that kind of effort, very briefly, includes the minority communities and is not just an excuse to try to relocate people, Mike Huber, that look like you?
The biggest factor is schools and helping IPS and making sure that there are more educational opportunities for young people of all races and income levels. I mean, 1950, Center Township's population, about 337,000. Today, it's 140,000. So I hope it's not a matter of controversy that we need more people in urban Indianapolis, particularly in Center Township. We just need more people, and that is the key to really growing the entire nine counties. We've got the housing inventory, we've got the neighborhood assets. We just need more people, and schools are a huge part of that. Hence our involvement with IPS.
Mike Huber with the Chamber, Joe Slash with the Urban League, Dr. Louis Farabee, Superintendent of IPS. Thanks very much. That's it for today. We'll do it all again tomorrow, same time, same station. I'm Amos Brown. See you then.